We cannot do this cold open.
Oh, you've got an idea.
I have an idea. We can find a second one. But I just thought this was the first thing that came to mind because it's so topical right now.
And we can be topical because we've lost our...
we've lost our runway. So, Tristan, mm-hmm. Big question on everyone's mind. Everyone's got thoughts about it. Everyone's got opinions on it. What are your thoughts? What's your opinion on the slap?
Oh, boy.
Because it is actually impossible to have a good take on it.
Yeah, so that's the whole Will Smith and Chris Rock thing.
Yes.
My take on it is that those people have way too big bank accounts for me to really care about what's going on with them.
That's fair. And you know
what? In my mind, like everybody was like having all these like discussions about these people as if they're like, you know, people that you know and are friends with. And it's like they're multimillionaires. Like they don't care about you.
Right. That's a totally fair thing to say. But what's funny about the slap is that some people will hear you say that and that's no good. And you've lost all credibility now, Tristan,
because you have to
be fully on one side or the other. There's no gray area or nuance here. It sounds. Oh. And even
so this is like a Star Wars thing.
This is a Star Wars thing. And even still, regardless of what side you're on, you're also wrong.
Okay. Just so that I can like, you know, really get my John Carpenter levels of displeasure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll put my Star Wars take right next to my slap take, which is that there's only one good Star Wars movie and Rian Johnson directed it. There we go. We did it.
I got it.
Both of the hot takes out of the way. I have this because I'm like a science fiction guy. Everybody assumes that I really like Star Wars, including like my mother-in-law who like gets me like Star Wars stuff as presents and stuff like for Christmas or whatever. And I just gotta be like, I don't like it. I mean, like it's fine. Like they're fine movies to like watch a couple times, but like The Last Jedi was the only one that I was like, I want to watch that again. I want to see some cool stuff. I want to see Laura Dern 9/11 the Imperial spaceship.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Didn't Laura Dern 9/11's the spaceship, right?
Okay, yeah. Just wanted to make sure I got you there. Just making sure 100%. Now, you are famously a Star Trek fan, though. So are you perpetuating the dichotomy between Trek and Wars fans?
Maybe. I just think that Star Wars used to be... Like, I think that, I don't know, ever since they started making prequels and sequels... Like, when it was three movies, it was something special and it was really cool. But now it's like... There's a new Star Wars like every other week. So I'm like, I don't know.
And they got them TV shows now. I don't know about
it's not that. Special not anymore. When I was like seven and there were like three movies on the VHS that were like getting like, you know, tracked, like they were getting like scratches because we were watching them so much. That was special. But then, and now it's like, oh no, now there's movies with like Hayden Christensen and there's like 1,000 cartoons and comics.
There's so many shows now. I didn't even watch Boba Fett. It didn't look interesting and I don't like the character.
So welcome to Scott and Tristan talk about pop culture.
Yeah, this episode's about Star Wars now. I have not been able to talk about Star Wars on the internet for years because of a rule that I made up where I didn't want to do that because then people would yell at me in the comments. But the good news is that you and I are seemingly on the same page about a lot of Star Wars related stuff. So if I say something, you'll either agree or you'll be like, yeah, I don't really care. I didn't watch that one. So I'm free. I'm free to say whatever I want in this space.
True.
Tristan.
Okay. Oh, one last Star Wars take. Yeah. The Mandalorian is probably the only thing that I've been like, except for The Last Jedi, The Mandalorian is like the only thing post the original trilogy that I have been in any way excited about. Cause it was like legitimately good. Cause Pedro Pascal is a national treasure.
But yes, I agree. But can I just throw in that I did not like the finale of season two of Mandalorian?
With Polar Express, Luke Skywalker. That was
didn't
terrifying.
Care for it. Didn't care for it.
But this is actually a podcast called "It's Probably Not Aliens," where we debunk ancient aliens claims from the History Channel show and deal with pseudo archaeology and stuff.
That's about our longest intro that we've ever done, I think. That is not related to the topic.
I think that okay. So we're both YouTubers, and in YouTube world, you have to be so obsessed with viewer retention that you cannot have a spare second that isn't like generating content and keeping people's attention. While podcasts are a little bit more generous, so we are just like really enjoying that.
If you listener, and I'm sorry I'm shouting, if you listener allow us to have a couple minutes at the start of each episode to just goof around, then it helps us bring the energy. It helps us unwind a little bit, because these episodes tend to get all sad. Although I will say this one sounds like a real fun one. What's this one about, Tristan?
Oh, boy. Okay, so we're not going to space today. We're actually going to Mexico.
Fun.
One of my favorite countries. I've visited many times, and I enjoy every time I've been there. So in an episode you did with Kevin when I was away,
yes,
long, long time ago, back in the olden days of before I had a baby, which was approximately 3 months and 6,000 years ago in my mind.
Yeah, sounds about right.
That you did an episode about how aliens might be behind certain types of weather phenomenon.
Yes.
Including being literally accused of causing great extinction events throughout history.
Correct. They've both been accused of causing extinction events and also saving civilizations from extinction events. And I think our conclusion was it was two different sets of aliens that were playing chess with the human race, I think.
Well, if there's one of those aliens that wants to show up and suck all the CO2 out of the atmosphere, that would be really, really nice right now.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So they then talk about a bunch of different cases about when the aliens obviously use their weather manipulation technology to do major things. And in our previous episode, we talked about Noah's Ark, and like that was supposed to be a case of them flooding the world with their hyper technology.
Yes.
But the other one, there's a couple things, because this also hits another topic that is a bit of a bugbear for me. The other one is that they said that it caused the collapse of, and I remember these words in my head, that it caused the collapse of the Maya and the Aztecs.
Yes.
Which is, first of all, two cultures that are woefully conflated in a way that I really don't like. As somebody who almost became an archaeologist who studied the Aztecs. But
yeah,
either way.
The Aztecs were the ones with the cursed gold from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mayans were not them. They were the not them folks.
Oh, no. The Nahuatl them is actually the Aztecs. But anyways.
Dang.
But the thing is, actually, the Aztecs did.
That's a good joke, Tristan.
They did get the collapse of the Aztec Empire did happen because of aliens. The aliens were named Hernando Cortez and the conquistadores who sieged Tenochtitlan and brought a whole bunch of smallpox and basically wiped them out.
Yeah, that's no good. That's a History Channel episode about aliens that would probably not get nearly as many views as saying space aliens.
Yeah, the aliens that took down the Aztecs were from Spain. Anyway,
did you say space? Did you say
Spain.
They were from space?
In Spain! anyways, the other one, though, and this is the one that's going to be the subject of this episode, which is that the Maya collapsed because of wild weather machine phenomenon, which is interesting because it does tap into a very cool part of history that I am very excited to talk about, which is that the classical Maya civilization did have a major collapse between the 7th to 9th centuries, and we don't actually have a good, solid answer as to why. It's still a mystery to this day. And when we don't know the answer to something in archaeology, that means it must have been.
Aliens!
Yeah! So that's the topic of today. We're going to talk about the Maya collapse and the ancient alien claims that they were destroyed by weather machines, by like
they
some sort
sure
of like
were.
Dr. Doom's weather machine.
Well, I'm excited to learn more, but first, hello listeners. That's this show. It's probably not aliens. That's what we do here. We talk about ancient civilizations and ancient astronaut theories, and we debunk them and teach you about cool things from history. My name is Scott Nicewander. I know nothing about anything. I just kind of sit here and let Tristan talk to me about stuff, and I learn, and I soak it all up with my big normal-sized brain.
Your normal-sized brain and your normal-sized head.
That's right.
My name is Tristan Johnson, and I am a person who is addicted to Googling random things and going down holes, and I come back with that with a present like a cat for you.
Well, we did talk about holes a couple weeks ago.
That is true.
This is a different episode.
Yeah.
Unless holes factor in here.
Slightly.
Fun.
Kind of, yeah, we'll get into that, but today we're talking about the Maya collapse and what actually happened or what we think might have happened, and sort of get into maybe some stuff about why we should show caution when we just declare everything that we don't understand as being alien. This is an Alien of the Gaps type of situation, which is a very common ancient astronaut theory thing. So
alien in the holes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So the Maya people lived in a region of Central America, predominantly Mexico, but there's other parts of like Belize and Guatemala and El Salvador and such that have like Maya indigenous people. And specifically like the big like classical Maya civilization, which is where they had a lot of the major things that you probably are familiar with if you're familiar with the Maya, the temples, the pyramids, the jade masks, the you know, Chichen Itza, Coba. That's the Maya pyramid that I actually like climbed myself personally. And it's, yeah, it's this really cool part of Mexico, very tropical, very cool. And they had in this period between the 6th and 8th century, like they would study the monuments, because what happens is that they every year they would make monuments and they dated the monuments in their own dating system. And
oh, that's cute. Did they ever find love?
Oh, gosh. Okay.
That one caught you by surprise
a little bit. Yeah. Man, that was a dad joke. So from like the 6th to 8th century, we can see these monuments every year increasing, which implies that there was increasing activity in the region. Mm-hmm. But then around the year 750 AD, things started to precipitously decline to the point where by around the dawn of the 10th century, around the year 900, there were almost no classical Mayans left. We see some evidence in their written record about things that happened in places like Copan. We see like a long list of dynastic kings that go from the year 426 to 763, but then an unrecorded usurper shows up and then the dynasty abruptly ends. The last king on record only ruled until the year 900, went by the name of Jade Sky. So it just seems that like around the year 900, these kingdoms started just falling apart.
That's a gamer name, Jade Sky.
Jade Sky, yeah.
Check out Jade Sky on twitch.tv/Jade Sky.
Oh no, there's gonna be a real Jade Sky and he's gonna be super problematic or something.
I know, I really hope that's not a real person.
Yeah. And another way that we know that the Maya had some sort of collapse in their activity is through something called obsidian hydration dating. Are you familiar with obsidian?
This is going to be really embarrassing. I didn't know that obsidian was a real thing. It sounds like a fantasy thing, like a fantasy rock or metal or something.
It kind of is. It's very cool and unique in its own way and was very prominent in Mexico specifically. Like one of the regions to the far north where it's a lot drier is a place called Teotihuacan. And they had a whole lot of obsidian craft there. And it is essentially what obsidian is it's it's glass. It's glass made in a volcano. So like lava touches sand and makes this like obsidian glass. And indigenous people in Mexico had a really amazing way of making things out of obsidian by basically chipping the obsidian with like stone and stuff like that. And they made knives and spearheads and stuff like that that were like as sharp as like surgical scalpels, if not sharper. The Aztecs had a weapon called the Macuatl, which was this sort of like, it looks kind of like a cricket bat with like chunks of obsidian lining the edge of it. And reportedly, one strike from one of these could decapitate a horse.
That sounds simultaneously really cool. And also, like, if I held one, I would be scared that I would hurt myself just because of how sharp and dangerous that sounds.
Yeah. But one of the cool things about obsidian is because it, like, looks like it comes in these, like, you know, rock-like blobs until they're chipped open. And because it's glass, what happens is as it gets broken open and worked, it starts to absorb water at a very predictable rate, which means that you can actually, like, if you look at obsidian, you can judge how much water is in it. And through that, you can infer how old, like, at what point somebody took a obsidian and worked it.
Oh, that's really cool. It's like a glass sponge.
Yeah. And so what we could do is we can use that to, like, if we can, like, measure the amount of obsidian craft happening at different periods, we can kind of get like a rough, this is how an archaeologist would measure like how much activity, economic activity was going on, right? Like if you see a period where a lot of obsidian, like obsidian blades and chips and stuff like that are found dated to like this one period, it means that a lot of obsidian craft was happening, which likely means there was a lot more economic activity, right?
Oh, cool. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. So through studying the sort of record of these obsidian crafts, you can see that there was a period of growth in settlements and population estimates through through the 5th to the 8th century. At its peak, they suspect through this that the valley where a lot of these people were probably had a population higher than London at the same time. So this is like a very high, very large civilization.
Hustling and bustling.
And that's another thing that we underestimate about indigenous Mexicans is that like they were a very hyper populous like region. There's a lot of food and like a lot of people. To the point where Tenochtitlan, which was the capital of the Aztec Triple Alliance, at the point when the Spanish showed up, that city had a population larger than any city in Europe at that point. Anyways, I don't want to conflate them just because, like, you know, they're in the same kind of country today. But yeah, there's a steady decline afterwards in the Obsidian Record. So here's the big thing that we can talk about that kind of goes into like where Ancient Aliens is already kind of like getting a little sketchy, which is that what we're seeing is not some sort of like dramatic flood or like huge disaster that caused the area to clear out.
Sure.
We see a decline that persists for almost 200 years. So unless like there was a very subtle alien hand at work that was doing
just picking like, people off one by one over the course of a couple hundred years. Yeah.
They're very undramatic that it was this steady decline, which is far from the Independence Day scenario that the Ancient Aliens show tried to make it out to be. So that's we get there pretty quick. Okay, but we'll get into more stuff too. But what actually caused
the
Maya collapse is the question. Yeah,
that's the big question. So if it wasn't this big dramatic disaster that occurred all at once, then what could it possibly be? It couldn't possibly be anything else, Tristan. You'll have to do a lot to convince me otherwise.
Well, we're going to pick at that question. But first, we should probably indulge in a sign of our own civilization's upcoming collapse with some ads.
Yay! They're going to love that.
And we're back. Well, there's one more sponsorship, which is that obviously this podcast is sponsored by Tony's Obsidian Work. Have you ever needed a blade that was sharper than a surgical scalpel?
Yeah, I can't tell you how often I need something like that.
Tony's Obsidian Blades.
Well done, Tony. Thank you so much. I'll take a couple. I'll take, don't ask what they're for. Please don't ask me what they're for. Please.
That is between me and Huitzilopochtli, the Aztec god of war and human sacrifice.
Thank you for explaining that. I was like, I'm sure that was a good joke. I just don't get it.
Like I said, like very steeped in like Mesoamerican stuff. So that's a Mexican mythology joke.
the best kind of joke. The one that everyone will get.
This joke brought to you by Tlaloc, the jaguar god of rain.
Oh boy.
So the Maya collapse. What happened? What happened is a good question because we don't actually 100% know, to the point where I found that there are apparently over 80 different theories as to what happened to the Maya people.
And we're going to go through every single one right now.
Yeah. Well, they come in major categories. So luckily I've clumped it up a little bit. But there's not really at this point a main theory that is the overwhelming consensus of archaeologists.
Mm-hmm.
But I will mention that there is one that is starting to grow in popularity in more recent decades.
Okay.
So let's go through these theories.
80 theories. Kind of talk
about, 80 theories.
Theory number one. They all just got bored.
Top 80 Maya collapse theories. Here on, what's that YouTube channel that just does like top 10 lists or whatever?
Welcome back to Watch Mojo's 80 theories about the Mayan collapse.
There you go. I don't know what energy we're bringing to this. We've taken a couple weeks off and we're just like exploding, like pent up. It's probably not aliens energy.
Number 80. They all got canceled by the woke culture mobs.
Oh, no. So the first one is probably the one that you'd probably think is the most common, which is that they got invaded by the Toltecs.
Mm-hmm.
So there is evidence. So one of the major theories is that they were invaded. They were destroyed by invading people. And there is evidence that they were invaded in the 8th century by the Toltec civilization. But the thing is that while that would have caused a decline, we are seeing, though, that the Toltecs like the Toltec invasion was probably not the cause, because it was a dramatic, like one-time event, while we're talking about a centuries-long decline. It began so late that actually, like, it had already been declining for several centuries by that point. It's like saying that, like, barbarians caused the collapse of Rome. Well, it's like,
right,
you know, Rome was already well on its way to collapsing before they showed up and burned down the city. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it doesn't explain. And also, one of the things that happens is when you study, you know, long history, we see what happens when invasions happen in places. And the thing about it, and this is kind of like a thing that shows up in a lot of post-apocalyptic fiction too, which is that, like, yeah, we'll see signs of collapse and destruction, but we almost always, in fact, we always see at least some sign that institutions get rebuilt and things start to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of the Maya collapse, they didn't come back. People abandoned regions of the country. And that's not a thing you usually see in the wake of invasions. It can change a lot, but it's usually a short-term event and it usually runs its course. There's no case in the archaeological record of an invasion leading to entire regions being abandoned.
Yeah, just gone.
Yeah. The second, and this one's actually interesting because it also lets me talk about a different cool part of history, because I'm just getting you all distracted today.
I love it.
And that is that there was a trade system collapse. Now I'll get into what that means. So that there's a theory because it's pretty well established through kind of studying things, that Mexico had a pretty large and intricate trade network. So we see that signs that goods and stuff were moving across the country pretty regularly. You find jade that's kind of from the Yucatan. You find it in places like up north where there is no jade. You find like obsidian primarily probably came from a place like Teotihuacan kind of came down. And so this is all signs that there was an intricate trade network. Now there was a civilization called the Teotihuacanos who lived in Teotihuacan which collapsed in the 7th century, also kind of a mysterious fashion, which I think has something more to do with the El Nino effect, but we'll get that's not a topic of this.
Or aliens.
Are aliens behind the El Nino effect? Nobody's proven that it hasn't. So there you go. So there's the thought that there was a collapse of the Teotihuacan civilization, and that the Maya were heavily dependent on trade with Teotihuacan, another place I've been actually, and that led to sort of a breakdown of their economic system, because, you know, their civilization couldn't survive without intricate trade. And we do have precedent for this.
Okay.
Because there's a reasonable theory that something similar happened in the Mediterranean world at the end of the Bronze Age. Have you ever heard of the Bronze Age collapse?
Oh, that was when... So the Bronze Age was when comic books started getting a little bit too dark and gritty a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the heels of the silly, goofy Silver Age with like Jimmy Olsen and the Marvel boom and things like that. And so I guess that must have led to the 90s when the death of Superman happened. There was like a speculator bubbles. And you can stop me at any time, Tristan.
No. I'm letting you ride this out.
No, I have no idea what happened there.
So the Bronze Age was this interesting period where there were extremely developed and powerful civilizations in sort of the Eastern Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
This was the time of like Egypt probably being at like one of the high watermarks of its power, being a major regional power. And things that are really interesting about this period is that it was a time where there were these large empires that had extremely centralized and planned governments and economies. And then they all collapsed in a very short period of time. And there's a lot of mystery as to like what happened. One of the things people think is that bronze, which was a metal that was much more powerful than, or much more sturdy than copper, which was kind of used before, was very, it was very hard and expensive to make, because bronze is an alloy of copper and tin. But copper and tin don't show up in the same places, which means that in order to make bronze, you have to have very large trade networks that span like multiple countries and things like that. And so they believe that the Eastern Mediterranean was this deeply interconnected trade network, because they were making this alloy that was keeping all of these powerful empires running. Because when your soldiers have bronze and the people do not, the people do worse. So they think that because of some effects, and there's been various theories that have to do with like sea people invading, which they think is like a reference to like people from Cyprus and stuff like that, all the way to like,
I thought you were going to say mermaids or something
or mermaids.
Sea people, who knows,
or things like environmental problems or something. This is the thing. We don't really have like a perfect answer for this, that those trade networks broke down and all of these societies had a major collapse afterwards. And it wasn't until iron became the new predominant metal, because iron was not something that needed far-spanning trade networks to do. Iron not even being as good a metal as bronze, but it is easier to get from one place and kind of build in a more autonomous fashion.
It's good enough.
And so that would be the kind of difference between the transition between the bronze and iron age. Anyways, back to Mexico.
Yeah. So that was a whole, that was just an example of, we have precedent for this in other places of history, of trade collapse causing civilizations to disappear. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so we believe that, or there is, and there is in the record a distinct collapse that happens of Teotihuacan around the time that the Maya began to collapse. And we know that the Maya were heavily dependent on, or at least heavily intertrading with Teotihuacan.
Yeah.
So at least there was a major realignment of trade routes. And if those realignments took them away from the Maya, then that could have caused problems. But the problem with this one is that the Maya decline is timed to about a century after the decline of Teotihuacan. And there's a lot of evidence that the Maya prospered after the collapse of Teotihuacan. So the sort of like cause and effect are not perfectly synced in time by about a few centuries.
Yeah, which is pretty far apart. So kind of a trouble, a little bit of an issue with this theory.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've also studied the economic effects of the collapse of Teotihuacan on the Maya, and it led more to a hiatus than a collapse. There was a period of economic stagnation instead of growth, but it was, but we kind of have like a pretty good idea of what impact that actually had.
Yeah. They had to take a gap year, find themselves a little bit, and then get back to it. I get you.
And so that's a theory that's kind of gone away at this point. Another one is disease. Very common.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic case. Yeah.
Yeah. I just recovered from COVID last week. So I'm very familiar with disease as a vector of causing societal ills, no pun intended. But disease could, more than our previous explanations, actually explain depopulation, like people disappearing. And it could also explain having issues with repopulating a region. Specifically, not necessarily a virus or like a bacteria, but what could be the source of something that, like a disease that would cause a collapse in a specific region like that, would be some sort of parasite.
Interesting.
Because the Mayan homeland, you know, the Yucatan Peninsula, is tropical lowlands. Like, it's very flat and it's like, you know, full of tropical trees. It rains a lot. It's, you know, it's a place where parasites can be very common.
The perfect ground for them.
In fact, yes. And because, you know, their settlements would have been places where there was a lot of standing water and a lot of, like, you know, wastewater and stuff like that, were very easily could have become like major hubs of disease and parasite carrying insects and all those kinds of things. Mosquitoes and like and you know, all sorts of like disease could before, like, you know, modern plumbing, most cities were like just cesspits of disease. And if you factor in the fact that these cities were also in the middle of like tropical jungles, basically, you can imagine that there's a lot of opportunity for major plagues.
That makes sense. My desk is right next to my cat's litter box, so I get this. I get what you're saying very strongly, more so than I think most people on the planet Earth, because I smell those bad smells, and sometimes there are little flies. So
fun. Another thing, too, that could have been a disease that really caused a lot of damage is acute diarrhea. Things like diseases like cholera and such like that, which is usually made by mixing your sewer water with your drinking water, which was a very common thing up until recently. And unfortunately today, diarrhea is still one of the major causes of death in the developing world, especially of like children and babies. Because these are countries that don't have a lot of money. And even though diseases like cholera have very easy remedies, it's not profitable to give them, anti-diarrhea medication in order to save them. And so a lot of, especially children, die of diarrhea. And furthermore, like to fix it, they would need to the major thing that got rid of diseases like cholera in like Europe and in Western society was like modern plumbing. And modern plumbing is like a huge infrastructure project. Yeah. And we live in the age of neoliberalism where we don't build infrastructure anymore. We did that. We just live in the decaying ruins of stuff we built in the 60s.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It's holding up now.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. We don't need to fix anything. We don't need to build anything.
No bridges ever collapse.
High-speed rail? Get out of here. That's impossible.
Yeah. So because we know that this is a plague on our society today, it's very easy that, some sort of diarrheal illness could have caused a major population decline. So this one is actually not ruled out. This is one of the ones that has a lot of major, a lot of people who buy into it today. And at the very least, it's pretty well thought to be at least a partial explanation for the collapse of the Maya civilization.
Sure. It certainly is not the most far-fetched thing.
No. Then the one that has a lot more, this one's a lot more mainstream. This is sort of like probably the runner-up until very recently.
Okay.
And that is drought.
Ah, so the opposite of diarrhea.
So there is evidence in the records that there was a period of rapid climate change that caused a big drought in the Yucatan. And there's in Mexico in general, because of the El Nino effect, there actually are because of that, it goes through these periods of extreme drought and rain and stuff like that. Like the amount of rain that region can get in a season can vary a lot because of the El Nino effect.
Can you clarify for folks who don't know what the El Nino effect is?
I could be crucified for this one because I'm not I'm kind of going off of stuff I vaguely know, which is, trading territory. So take this with a gigantic pile of salt, but I believe it has something to do with the way that currents work in the Pacific Ocean. And because it can change from year to year. And when that happens, weather patterns in places in the Americas can change drastically.
Okay. That sounds familiar to me.
If you've ever heard of a year where it's an El Nino year or a La Nina year, I think that kind of has to do with it. So good question to Google.
Look it up. Hey, listener, look it up. This isn't our job. Oh, Tristan's looking it up. Never mind.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't. Yeah. Okay. El Nino causes the Pacific jet stream to move south and further east. During the winter, this leads to wetter conditions than usual in the southern U.S. and warmer and drier climates in the north.
Gotcha.
Since, Mexico obviously would be affected by that too.
Yeah. Well, all right. Weather is being wacky.
Yeah. Basically. And it's a well-established phenomenon that we are very familiar with.
Gotcha.
So the problem though, is that we have a hard, the reason why this isn't the main theory is because we have a hard time finding quantitative data on this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll explain what that means. So we do know, we can study the record and find that there are some periods that are much drier than other periods, but we can't really get a good, this is how many millimeters of rain they got versus this year. So we know that there's less rain. We don't know if it was such little rain that it would have caused crop failures and stuff like that.
Right. You're saying we know the relative, was it wetter or drier than the previous year, but we don't know exactly by how much of anything.
Specifically. Yeah.
And
we do that through isotope measurements in caves, because another thing that's really cool about the Yucatan is that it is full of caves. That's the holes aspect. They're called cenotes.
We're back at the holes.
Yeah, they're called cenotes, and they are really, really cool. I've actually swam in one, and they're these.
Oh my god! Why you have lived a full life of interesting travel?
I have. I said I've been to Mexico probably. I've probably been to Mexico 7 or 8 times. I really love it. It's a really cool country. The cenotes. So studying isotopes in these caves have shown that there was a moderate decrease of rainfall around the time of the Maya collapse, possibly periods of up to a 70% decrease in annual rainfall. But the problem with this theory is that the collapse wasn't universal in all places at once, which a drought would accompany for. So like if there was a drought, we would have seen the collapse happen everywhere at once, this happened kind of unevenly in different places, which means that at least it's not the theory. It could be a reason, basically.
So just another thing to add on top, potentially.
And a lot of the evidence also comes from the northern Yucatan, which is far from the southern Yucatan, which is where the Maya flourished the most. But the thing is that it does have some merit because the region does have issues with getting fresh water. Like, fresh water is a major problem in the Yucatan. Yeah. And like the Maya people didn't have like many great sources of fresh water. They typically collected rainwater and drank that.
Okay.
So the fact is like water is already like, you know, it's a very fickle resource in this region. And so getting a good source of fresh water can be difficult.
Yeah. Hard to reliably have a source on hand.
Exactly. Which kind of brings us to our last theory. That is the one that has kind of been gaining in popularity and is kind of a sign of our times in many ways, which is that the Maya people over the centuries went through, basically over expanded the carrying capacity of the region they lived on. And it led to a systemic ecological collapse in the region.
Oh, no.
So the way that they their farming and expansion and more settlements caused soil depletion, deforestation, loss of biodiversity, and also siltation of the water. So like basically getting like silt and stuff into the water. And in that case, they would have been making their ecosystem more fragile, which means that something like a drought, they would have less things to react to or to deal with it, right?
Yeah, to rely on to help. Yeah.
And also that Maya farming practices involved a lot of heavy water usage. So in many ways, what I've seen is that it's actually kind of a feat that the Maya were able to flourish at all, given the sort of ecological situation and the issues with water in the region, and that the collapse happened because they were already in this very precarious ecological environment. And then as they grew, they basically overtapped the natural resources and, you know, one major, shoved the process.
Yeah, just one little slip.
Yeah. So basically their situation got more and more unstable, and then things like droughts or things like diseases would be much more common and much harder to deal with.
Yeah. Oh, that is, they're just like hanging in the balance. And then once that balance is off, it just, everything sort of crumbles like dominoes a little bit.
Yeah. And actually, this is an interesting thing because this actually gets a little bit into my PhD research, because there's a thing called complexity theory, or which we're getting like way out of history and archaeology here into theory.
This episode has tapped into both your and my ADHD by jumping around from time. Topic to topic. I'm a fan of this.
This is our ADHD friendly section of the show.
No, I love it.
So complexity theory is this idea of how do you study complex systems that you can like make a lot of like systems that have simple agents that interact in certain ways and make things that are very adaptable and complex, like an ant colony. How does a group of ants that have individually like next to no intelligence, but they have like these like adaptable intelligent systems? How do they develop things like that? And it's just by following simple rules and the kind of develops out of it. But what we've studied about complex systems like that is that it's very easy to move a piece out of position that causes a sort of cascade failure that then causes the collapse of the whole system. And it might be difficult to even know what the thing was that caused it.
Right, yeah.
So there's an economist by the name of Nassim Taleb who wrote a book called Black Swans. And Black Swans, and basically what this is a reference to is events that seem impossible, but in retrospect seem inevitable.
Oh.
The way that they explain this is that the reason why it's called Black Swan is because in Europe for a long time, a Black Swan was sort of a term we used for like when pigs fly. Like it was like a thing that was impossible. Oh, but
that's
then
fun. I didn't know that.
Yeah. But then we went to Australia and found that there are actually species of black swan that live in Australia.
Oh. So kind of throughout that whole idiom, huh?
Yeah. And so the idea is that there's like events like, say, like how the assassination of the Archduke Franz Ferdinand could lead to the the collapse of the world order into the most destructive war in human history at that point, right?
Yeah.
Or like how 9/11 went from this like complete shock to the system until like, oh, you study like the, you know, how we led up to that situation. It's like, oh, it's like, it was kind of inevitable that something like this would have happened. You know, there was all this intelligence and stuff like that, that they didn't accept, or they overlooked until after 9/11. And they looked back and found like, oh shit, like, because they did the 9/11 commission report that basically outlined all of the failures that led to not catching this in time. And they're like, look, we had all this evidence and we screwed up because organizations weren't talking to each other. So that's the kind of thing of like a black swan.
Yeah. Like how someone might just start a fun ceremony to award great movies, and then decades down the line, actors slap each other.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
See, the thing is that it's going to cause an escalation, because now an Oscar without minor violence is going to be kind of a dull affair. And so if you want to get attention at the Oscars, you're going to have to do increasingly intense violence to the point where they're just going to be starting to shoot each other on the stage, which is going to be brutal.
Well, I did hear that this year has a 60% higher views than last year. And that's what they want. Like, that's why they do these, the bad skits, and like they cut all these awards for time or whatever. So like, I don't know. I think you might be right.
Yeah, people are going to watch it now waiting for the next slap, because you know, now anything can happen.
I think you might be right, and I don't like it, but I think you might be right.
But anyways, back to the Maya. So there could be that they made their system vulnerable by removing biodiversity and overusing their resources. And then something critical got taken out of the system, and it caused the entire ecological system to collapse.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like where we are. We're kind of like, well, there was probably a drought, but the drought was probably in a period where they were already vulnerable.
Right. It's one or two, you know, little things that just sort of cause that, you know, those dominoes to start falling.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, so that's kind of sort of like where we're at when it comes to the Maya collapse. Could an alien have caused the drought? Could an alien have, depleted their biodiversity and, you know, overfarmed their fields and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I mean,
theoretically, but I feel like I have a better explanation, which is that that weather happens, and that the Maya were the ones that overdid their you know, carrying capacity.
But who controls the weather, Tristan?
The sun.
Oh,
and the sun is in space.
And the sun is in space, where aliens are.
There you go.
Confirmed.
So I don't know why a drought or a systemic collapse over a period of centuries needs to be explained by aliens, because I feel like alien intervention would be very, it would stick out, right? Like, it would be very weird not be like this like long gradual decline.
Did they have any evidence for the alien thing, or was it literally just like, well, we haven't been able to figure it out, so it's aliens?
Yeah, that's the alien of the gaps, because basically they're just explaining of period of things that aliens could have intervened in the weather, and then they just were like, and that could have caused the Great Flood, it could have caused the collapse of the Aztecs, it could have caused the collapse of the Maya. And it's like, okay,
no,
sure.
Yeah.
But we also know, we have a pretty good record that there are many ways that droughts can happen that don't involve aliens. We've seen many non-alien involved droughts in history.
Yeah, that's true. No one talks about all the non-alien droughts.
And on that note, the other thing too is that I kind of been guilty of doing this myself, but calling it the collapse of the Maya is kind of a wrong term. This is kind of the part where I make you sad. And that is that it should be called the collapse of the classical Maya civilization, because they aren't gone. The Maya still exists today.
They're there.
There are about 6 million Maya people in Central America, which makes them the single largest block of indigenous people north of Peru.
That's incredible. That's so many.
Mm-hmm. And like, the place that they live in is like resort country. Like the Yucatan, or the Mexican state of Quintana Roo, is like where Cancun is. Like, Cancun is a Maya word.
That makes sense. Living it up.
Yeah. And they were a very highly developed civilization that had a very intricate set of hieroglyphic writing. They had a calendar system that was very complex that we're definitely going to have to get to, because the Maya calendar itself is its own whole ancient aliens thing.
Sure is.
But because they had this highly developed civilization, and it wasn't until relatively recently that we were able to start translating the hieroglyphics, there were a lot of question marks. There were a lot of things we didn't know. And so the Maya have become a lightning rod for pseudo-archaeology. We have already, like King Pakal, for example.
Yeah.
So we will be back. The Maya, like the Egyptians, have definitely come up a lot as a ancient aliens favorite, because we just spent a long time where we didn't know their language. And now we're starting to, and it's really cool because not only are we able to translate these ancient ruins, but actually we've been kind of bringing the written version of Maya and reintegrating it with the indigenous spoken version of Maya and sort of trying to give it back to indigenous Maya people to like learn their own ancient language, which is kind of this cool little thing going on. The Maya are not aliens. They were, their collapse has a lot of very plausible explanations. We just don't know which one it might be or what, you know, variation of it. And they were able to do all of those things despite not being white, and you didn't need aliens.
That is true. I do think this is really, this is interesting to me just because, like, because they're still figuring it out, because scholars and historians and all these people are still trying to figure it out. I think it's really interesting that there's still this not quite decided on mystery, historical mystery, and there's all these different things that it could be, and you know, we've talked about this so many times in the show, but, you know, just because we haven't figured it out doesn't necessarily mean it's aliens. It could just be something a little bit more reasonable, even if we haven't quite figured out what it is yet, 100%.
Yeah, and exactly. And also, like, this is a mystery that we are making progress towards.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, it's not until very recently that archaeologists have taken an extreme interest in things like ecological collapse, or, you know, like biodiversity and things like that, because our society is just coming around to accepting that as a thing we should be worried about. And so there's a lot of like I know that when I left the history profession, that like one of the big things that was sort of really taking off was environmental history. And so this is archaeology is kind of having a similar thing. So this is a developing and vibrant field that obviously could explain a mystery that's been around. This is why, you know, constant self-criticism and analyzing the way that we analyze things, i.e. like the postmodern type movement, is super critical, because it gets us to look at things in new ways and discover new methods of analysis like this.
Well, very exciting.
Yeah, so that's the Maya collapse.
Well, that was less exciting. The Mayan collapse was not as exciting, but learning about it was.
But yeah, that was a fun one. This is one I definitely wanted to do. And when we get to the Maya calendar, I have so many calendar opinions that it's gonna be a rough one.
Oh boy. Well, mark your calendars, listener, by following this show and this whole podcast on whatever podcast platform you're listening to, and also on Twitter at @probsnotaliens, where you can find us. You can also find us other places on the internet. Tristan, where can people find you?
I have a YouTube channel called Step Back History. And, you know, the COVID thing I mentioned earlier kind of put a stall on my next video, but it is coming together soon. And, all things going well, by the time this episode comes out, we will, it'll be out. So I'm coming back. It's the first video I filmed since December.
What a break. You've earned it. And then if you want to hear more of me and my words and my thoughts, where I'm a little bit more prepared and scripted, you can check out my videos on NerdSync on YouTube. That's NERDSYNC. I make video essays about comics and cartoons, and I don't know, I'm branching out. And how Amazon is bad. The the company, not the place. Well, I mean, I don't really know. The Amazon place I know next to nothing about, but the company I know is bad.
And there goes the Audible sponsorship.
Can't do that one anymore. Yeah. Darn. Please leave reviews. I think I kept mentioning in other episodes that you can leave reviews on Spotify. I don't think that's true anymore. I think you can leave ratings, but maybe not reviews. I don't know. I've not been able to find any like reviews, but on Apple Podcasts, you can do that. And, that would be appreciated if you can do those and tell your friends. That's how this podcast grows. And we are growing, and it's because you keep telling people, and
that's
really
a good
appreciate
announcement.
That.
This show is now on YouTube.
Yes.
So if you like to listen to your podcast on YouTube, there is a It's Probably Not Aliens YouTube channel where you can listen to the show if that's the way that you prefer to get podcasts. I know that there are some people who that is. So.
And it allows us to have a comment section, which could be either fun or dangerous.
Yeah, the first two comments were words or thought fossils and ruin me, History Daddy.
Perfect.
So we're already off to a good start.
Great start so far. Incredible. Well, thank you so much, everyone. And of course, you can find links to where you can listen to the show and so many other things at probsnotaliens.com. If you want to go there, really simple address.
And until next time, people, Rian Johnson made the best Star Wars, and the truth is out there. Probably.
We got a little distracted by the Star Wars, but I do think that we were ultimately right in our opinions, and that's really what matters.